Bridgewater founder Ray Dalio credits Transcendental Meditation for his success. And his, for those who don't know, he's the founder of the world's largest hedge fund, Bridgewater Associates. They have, what, $100 billion plus under management, I think. And his quote is, "Meditation, more than any other factor, has been the secret to whatever success I've had." That is a hell of an endorsement. For me, it's been getting over that resistance to what I perceived as sort of a woo-woo, new agey type thing, and the ability to sort of view it almost as just a warm bath for the mind, where I'm taking a mini vacation from my own brain in a way, which may or may not, depending on who you ask, be the most helpful way to look at it. But I found that a very kind of useful lens through which to view it. But how do you, if there is a particular type of meditation you follow, what is it? Or how do you personally meditate? I mean, what do you think of or not think of? How long do you do it, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, when I was 17, 18, I started studying very simple contemplative and quiescent Buddhist sitting meditation, where I would focus on my breath. And, you know, this is when I was a late teenager. And then I started getting involved with Tai Chi. And I started studying East Asian philosophy very deeply. And this is where I got increasingly into moving meditation, which is the most deep practice, or the practice that I've personally done most deeply, Tai Chi form meditation. So the meditative form of Tai Chi is sort of the essence of the art, and then the fighting application is what I was competing in. And so I spent many years meditating 4, 5, 6 hours a day with Tai Chi. Today, I combine my Tai Chi practice with sitting meditation again. Most people, when they enter meditation, what I suggest is they just practice very simple sitting meditation, following their breath. And it's a practice which doesn't have to be very complex. They can, for example, just sit either cross-legged or comfortably in a chair and follow their breath. And it's very interesting because they'll notice after 1 or 2 seconds that their mind starts racing off. And usually what happens when you have really driven guys who are trying to meditate for the first time and their mind races off, they get all pissed off. They're just like, angry, frustration. They feel like they're failing at meditation. And one of the most important things to do is to embrace the fact that meditation isn't about perfection. It's about the return to breath. So when you find your mind racing, you observe that and you return to your breath. And that's a tough emotional hurdle for a lot of guys. And it's very interesting because over time, you know the metaphor of basically the mind is a wild stallion that over time you're taming, and you ultimately learn to still it. It's racing, it's bucking, it's pulling against anything you put it, any kind of line you put on it. But ultimately, the circles get smaller and smaller, and you learn to observe when your mind is getting caught up in some kind of mental or emotional addiction more and more quickly and fluidly. And the return to breath becomes easier and easier. And it's very interesting, by the way, as a competitor, because I relate to the theme of channeling emotion or fear, whatever is rising, you know, as a world-class competitor, in very much the same way we might speak about meditation. You know, I spoke at a conference on grit recently, and it was very interesting for me because, for the most part,
grit.
When I listen
to grit,
resilience,
GRIT,
yeah, which is, of course, a core educational principle in a lot of charter schools these days, hugely important, teaching kids to be resilient. And it's very interesting because when I hear people speak about resilience from, and this is sort of we're moving a little bit aside from meditation, but we'll bring it back, the focus is on, for example, overcoming difficulty, suffering, learning to basically push through. What people don't realize is that world-class performers, what they've done is they've reoriented their relationship to suffering, or that to the point of resistance. They've learned to embrace it. They've learned to see the beauty in these moments where there's pain, because that's incredible room for growth. And I think that a lot of what you learn to do in meditation is observe the addictive way you might be defining something. And if you want to, you can simply alter that definition. So you can change your relationship to pain or the rain or a huge storm or fear or anger. So, for example, people from the outside will use the term fearlessness, right? But if you speak to any great soldier or SEAL team member or fighter or UFC guy, they'll tell you, mixed martial arts, right, great, you know, world-class fighter, they'll tell you that they feel fear. They just know how to sit with their fear and how to work with it and how to channel it. So the idea of fearlessness is sort of a false idea which is imposed from the outside by a spectator. And when you observe world-class performers, what they've learned how to do is harness fear, nerves, anxiety, bring them in, embrace them, have a working relationship with them, and channel them into intensity. And meditation is an incredible forum or vehicle in which you can do this, because you learn to observe where you have addictive relationships, and you realize that they're not absolute, and you can actually transform your relationship to any of these thought patterns, thought constructs, cognitive biases, or emotional patterns.